Welcome to the Pastor and Intern Podcast. My name is Eric. I'm the pastor on the podcast. I'm here with Will, the intern. Will, how you doing?
Doing great.
Doing great? You watched the Jordan documentary last night?
I did.
Okay, good. You passed your first test of the week. But we're also here with Jenna. Jenna, how are you?
I'm tired.
Yeah, stayed up late, apparently. And me and Will are like the old men. We're like, yeah, we went to bed at 11. That's a little past my bedtime. And Jenna's like, 3 in the morning.
So when you moved, I accidentally unplugged my headphones here, and I was like, what in the world just happened?
Oh.
Problem solved, though. Fixed it. I can hear everything.
You bring a lot of drama to the podcast.
Do I?
Yeah.
Name another thing.
The cricket.
That wasn't me.
You were freaking out.
I didn't plant the
cricket. You
are
freaking out. You didn't plan to unplug your headset, but we get it.
It did.
You're looking for attention. I understand.
All right. Okay. Okay over there. All right.
I'm just kidding. Jeez.
You know what?
See, these young people.
I'm not doing great anymore, so.
I'm doing terrible. I'm doing awful.
There is.
What are we talking about today, Will?
So you did watch the Jordan documentary?
Yes.
How was that?
Good. I could have watched it for the next 6 hours. It was so good, man. Because it just gives you behind the scenes stuff about Michael Jordan you just wouldn't have.
Yeah.
That's pretty great.
So let's walk through the first 6 episodes, line by line, of what happened.
No, we're not doing that.
For those in this room who have not watched the episode yet.
No. We should encourage them to go watch them.
Yes, you really should, though.
Now, watch the ESPN2 version because they're the clean version.
Yes. I watch it. I watch that version.
I feel like you just have to say that because we're sitting in a church.
Yeah, I know.
Well, we said it last week.
Yes. Because if you turn it on ESPN, like an innocent person would, you'd be really surprised about what you hear.
Yes, yes.
And I would not encourage looking up things that they left out of the documentary. That's all I'm going to say about that.
I have not done that yet, so interesting.
Yeah, so don't do that.
You know who they don't talk about often in their documentary, though? Jordan's family. They talk about his mother and father a lot, but not his wife and kids.
Yeah.
At least so far.
I know he's been divorced once. I don't know. I don't know how many wives he's had.
I would say, though, I'm not an NBA fan like whatsoever, and I'm probably still never going to be an NBA fan whatsoever.
Yeah.
But it is very interesting to just see how amazing. I mean, the guy's just ridiculously good.
Yeah, he is.
So, anything else on the sports world before we move on to the actual things for the day?
No.
Nothing else? Andy Dalton to the Cowboys?
No. We're not talking. No, that's not news. Okay, here we go.
Jenna's like, this is terrible.
I'm just like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
All right, so let's start with this. So we talked about Joe Biden last week. You got a little rant over about Joe Biden, sexual assault stuff.
Yeah.
Not being brought up in the media. Well, MSNBC, which, by the way, why do you have to have a name, MSNBC? Why can't it just be like NBC News? Or
does it have something to do with their website or something?
I don't know, but geez.
No idea.
That's a long acronym.
Because I want to say MSNBC. That MSN was its own thing, and then NBC bought it or something, and now it's MSNBC.
I don't know. Maybe so.
Okay, cool.
We should have shortened it.
No clue. But so he did have an interview because they have a thing called Joe's Corner or something like that. And they asked him about the sexual assault allegations.
They did.
Jenna, did you watch the interview?
I did not. I don't think I watched that one.
Yeah,
I watched part of one that was on like CNN.
Right. So it's like Morning Joe or something, and it was humorous.
It was it was like watching a train.
So he said, so his quotes about the allegation obviously is, no, it's not true. I'm saying unequivocally, it never happened, and it didn't. It never happened. So that's obvious. And of course, that's going to be what he says. So.
Oh, yeah. He's not going to be like, yeah,
I did it.
Right. He's not gonna do that.
What's humorous about this interview is just how much it's like the guy struggles
to speak
in
to talk.
An interview. Yeah, I mean, it's just it's just
he's been doing this a long time.
I'm just like, you're a politician, regardless of what party you're from. Like, politicians, they speak. They're good speakers. They're supposed to be able to talk circles around people. But like, how did he make it this far?
I don't know. With a bunch
of
help,
if he can't talk.
I don't know. I mean, it's just because, and that's what it seems like. That's what, when you, I mean, you just watch what he's saying, you're just like, do you even?
I cringe.
Well, it's like, it's different whenever you're in a debate and you've like either done the research or some intern has done the research for you and they hand you a card.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, know this because they're going to ask this question.
But then when you're being interviewed.
But when you're being interviewed and like you've not prepared for the questions, it's just not.
No.
It's not good.
Not at all. And so, but Biden is still running in the presidential race, right? And he even still has sort of a chance. There's still a couple states that have to decide.
Sure.
Whether or not they're going to choose Trump or Biden or whatever or however that works, I'm not even sure. But he's still in the presidential race. So my question, I guess, for us to discuss this morning is how much do you think these whole sexual assault allegations affect his presidential run? Do you think it's going to hurt him, help him, not affect him at all? What do you think?
In
his run for the presidency.
I think it's going to hurt, but I don't know that he's felt the full effect of that hurt right now.
Yeah, I was about to say, as of right now, I don't think it's really doing... I think him being a bad speaker lately is doing more damage than the actual charges itself.
Yeah. Sure. I think this specific type of problem he's having with the sexual assault thing is just going to get worse over time.
Yeah.
Because you know that more and more details are going to leak out about it as the time goes on. You'll have Trump talking about it more and more as we exit the COVID stuff. It's just going to be bad. And the worst part of the interview for me was, and it was just the nail in the coffin for me, was when she said, she brought up the Kavanaugh stuff and how they tried to really go after him with the same logic, with less evidence. And then she basically looks at Joe Biden and asks, well, so why does this apply to everyone else but not Joe Biden? And it was just like she had punched him in the stomach. Like it took him 2.5 seconds to recover from the question being asked.
He's just like,
and in an interview setting, that's 3 years.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
He was just like, I did not. It's like,
okay, we get it.
Right.
Because they want them to open. So he's got these documents at Delaware, right? Which is, I guess, where he was the senator at.
Yes.
That are his like Senate documents or something like that, and they want him to open them up to the public.
Yeah.
He's like, well, no, they don't have anything. But the National Archives apparently has the comments or things made, so he asked for that to be opened up.
Yeah.
But not the Delaware, and she's like, well, that's kind of sketchy. Why not just open both of them up?
Yeah. If you're innocent, why don't you just do that?
Right.
Which politicians do all the time. Yeah. Right. Like. But kind of like Clay was saying last week. It's just hard for Joe Biden to get over something like this because Donald Trump is just so open about all of his failures. Like, yeah, I did that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like that's who he is. Yeah, I did that, you know. And so now that Joe Biden is backtracking, it makes it really hard for
him. Yeah.
I think it's just ammunition for Trump, as if he needed any.
If he needed anything else to say.
Right, which he doesn't.
No, he does not.
So I don't know if you've seen these things. I know Eric has because you brought them up to me yesterday, but they're called murder hornets.
Gosh, oh, no.
So did you look them up? I didn't realize when Eric mentioned it to me that they were actually as big of a deal apparently as they are.
Yeah. I'd never heard of them before, didn't know anything about them.
Yeah.
And my boyfriend's in town right now, and I asked him, I was just like, have you heard of a murder hornet? He's like, and I showed him a picture, and he was like, oh, God, those things? Because he's been to China.
Okay.
Like his parents were missionaries in China and stuff. Yeah. So he's been over there multiple times, and he's just like, he's seen those things. He's like, oh, God, those things are over here now? And I'm just like, oh, God.
They apparently killed 50 people
a year. That's not
a
good reaction.
Yeah, so they're more than double the size of honeybees, and they have a wingspan measuring more than 3 inches.
I am terrified.
About that big.
I'm terrified of any bugs.
They are huge.
Any bugs I'm scared of.
Yeah.
So the fact that thing is so big.
Like, I killed a regular hornet this past week. And that thing was big.
Speaking of bugs, there was a pretty giant spider over there on that wall. So,
oh my gosh!
Just saying, I walked out of my office.
Of all
and
things,
I was like,
spiders don't bother me.
But if you'd have seen a murder hornet right there,
that
would terrify me way more than a spider.
Well, they can
ever
fly
would.
At me. Spiders can,
and they're huge.
They are. Yes, yeah, so, right. They kill around 50 people a year in East Asia, so they're really generally found over there, right?
Yeah.
And now they're popping up sort of on the West Coast, and scientists and people are like, what in the world?
What do we do?
I'm just like, did somebody bring this over here? Because like,
run to the hills!
I don't think it flew from China. Right.
Now, the shocking thing about this is that the worst problem these things bring is not that they kill people. The worst problem, apparently, is that they can kill honeybees.
Uh-huh. They kill honeybees, yeah.
So they can destroy beehives in just like a few hours. And so people are all worried about the honeybees. So one zookeeper said this, and this is kind of funny. Says, last November, a beekeeper in Washington State found thousands and thousands of his honeybees with their heads torn off.
Oh, man.
I mean, just absolutely insane. He was like, there's nothing else that could have done this other than, I mean, they just rip through.
Have you seen, like, honeybees. The zoom-ins of the hornets' faces, too?
Yeah, they're vicious.
Like,
they're
just actually ridiculous. Look, they just look terrifying. Its eyes and
but
everything.
It's, again, it's one of those things where people like the sky's falling mentality. now that we're moving out of the COVID stuff.
Here's another thing.
Like,
to...
what else is going to kill us?
Yeah. And it's I think I was reading something this morning. There was a story about a guy who got stung like 7 times, and he's still living now. So I don't know if it's...
No.
I mean, if you're like critically already ill and you get stung, then maybe.
And I feel like whenever it's like, it kills 50 people a year, I feel like that's like... people that got like attacked by a swarm of them probably because I mean normal hornets I feel like can kill you if you get stung by a swarm of them.
Right. I would also,
or if you're allergic to them.
Sure. I'd be interested to see out of how many people got stung in a year.
Yeah.
So that's like, but 50 out of a million. Then okay,
yeah.
Well,
but it's also like they're not walking down our streets waiting for us to come out to our cars. Like,
yeah.
That's
just
not what's
most likely if you bother them or hit their nest.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I like people's general fear of bugs is kind of ridiculous, because bugs generally don't go out of their way to attack people. Like, they literally feel threatened and then they attack you.
It's the same thing with snakes, but I'm just
I don't care. I'm just...
I just got chills.
I'm terrified of moths. Of all the bugs, my worst.
Are you serious?
Yeah. That's like the number one bug I'm scared of.
I had a dream that there was a snake in my bed. I mean, I just...
Oh, my god!
It is my worst nightmare. I'm telling you, I cannot... Ooh, goodness.
I don't like butterflies either, because they look like moths.
All right, Will, save us from
the snakes.
What's next on the list?
Terrible. Speaking of, so this is not next on the list, but this is off the top of my head.
Okay.
So we have this, like, so outside of my window at my house, there is this bird. So we have this plant, this old plant of basically dying, which, anyway, so it was dying. And this bird has planted eggs in this plant. She's, like, built a bird's nest and has, like, eggs in this plant. And but what she doesn't realize is that it's on my porch with my, like, deadly cat. Mm-hmm. And so there's, like, every day my cat will go underneath. So I've had
to
the bird nest was just sitting on the table, and I've had to, like, pick it up and put, like, 2 stools up, and then the bird nest on top of the stools so that the cat can't get to it. And she's just waiting. It's like she's just waiting on that bird to accidentally jump out of the thing.
She's waiting for a bird to fall
out.
And
I'm telling you, it will. She almost got 2 rabbits last week.
Oh my gosh. My cat does the same stuff.
Now, the funny thing about that is I'm like, go get him. Yeah. And then as soon as she runs after him, I'm like, hey, run! You know, and the bunnies are like running everywhere. And it's like this like insane scene in the side yard. So.
Yeah, my cat does that with squirrels. Like, we'll be chilling in the house or something.
Yeah.
And my cat's just an outside cat. I mean, we'll let him in if he wants to come in, but he's an outside cat. And we'll randomly, I mean, there's a lot of squirrels at our house, so sometimes we'll randomly hear either screaming or we'll hear something thud against the side door, and it's my cat playing with it. He'll kill it, and then he likes to sling it against the door and play with it.
Oh, no,
cats are psychos.
Mine will not kill it. Mine will just, like, destroy it enough where it
maim
can't.
It.
Yeah, and then just let it, like, run around.
Oh, my god!
I mean, it is terrible.
Your cat's
a psycho. You're just watching it, and you're like... Who in the world?
And then he eats it. So we'll like walk outside. I'll go to walk our dog out, and there's just like part of a squirrel laying there. And I'm like,
no, thank you.
Somebody's listening to this and they're like, what the heck? Sorry about the gory stuff, I guess. Okay, so let's move on. So we talked about Kim Jong-un last week, and now he disappeared. He has now reappeared. So he is back.
It's almost like it's magic.
Trump stated that I, for one, am glad to see that he is back and well. So Trump is glad to see that Kim Jong-un is back.
Yeah, never good look, but whatever.
He is back and well. I think it's more of a national security. I think he's trying to protect the American people, I assume.
Do you?
I feel like North Korea is one of those countries that you like to be on the good side of.
Yeah, but...
Right?
But you can't... But you also can't be like, you know what, who I'm happy for? This psycho that he's still alive. You know, you can't do that.
I guess maybe in the aspect of like, you know... Trump has kind of has a relation. I don't know how good of a relationship he has.
I mean, he went
Kim
over there
Jong-un,
and talked to him.
But yeah, he's went over there and talked to him. So he's put all this work into Kim Jong-un. So then, like, if he dies and somebody else becomes leader, then you just got to go through that whole process.
Do it all again.
Yeah.
Well, from a human dignity standpoint, we are happy to see that Kim Jong-un
I don't want him to be dead.
Living. Right.
I mean,
now.
I don't want the poor guy to go to hell.
The leader. So let's stop there before we end. So
you brought it up. I'm sorry.
Eric's over here like wishing death upon Kim Jong-un.
I'm not.
And, you know, I've got to make sure I clarify.
I don't want him to die and go to hell. Okay.
So, Ari, why don't you tell us a little bit about the CSB Bible before we move on to our main topic for the day?
So the CSB Bible is a unique translation of the Bible. It takes two concepts. So it takes the concept of the NIV, which makes it super readable easy to consume, easy to read a lot of scripture at once. And then it takes the idea that the NASB has had, which is very wooden, very true to the text, the original languages, and it takes both those concepts, mashes them together, and has a CSB Bible. So the CSB Bible began with the Holman Christian Standard Bible, but it was a little too wordy for people, so they trimmed off the words a little bit to make it even more accurate to the text, and now it is the Bible that I read from. It's my favorite Bible. I hope that it's the Bible that I continue to read, and it's the Bible that I preach from and all that stuff. So CSB Bible.
Good translation.
Would recommend.
Yes, we would.
Would recommend.
We would, we would. So there's something going on this week called the National Day of Prayer. Mm. It is on Thursday. It's interesting, and I don't know that I really remembered that it was on Thursday until literally every pastor in America was preaching on prayer
You're
yesterday.
You're welcome.
And, well, tell them the truth. Tell them the truth.
I had no idea.
Exactly.
I'm terrible with the Christian calendar. Yeah. If it's not Easter or Christmas, no idea.
So Eric didn't know. He happened to preach on it. That's just the Holy Spirit working through you right there.
That's right.
Isn't it?
That's right.
You can preach on prayer, and you didn't even know that it was a...
You just happened to do it.
It's Jesus. Yeah, I don't know.
Crazy. But it is the National Day of Prayer. They are, so their main verse or their main point is to pray God's glory across the earth.
Okay.
Okay, and it's Habakkuk 2:14. So can you look that up for me?
Oh man.
Habakkuk 2:14. Here's a sword drill on the
Oh, there it is.
Habakkuk.
Habakkuk what?
Oh, I said Habakkuk. Habakkuk.
Habakkuk.
You didn't even like correct me. 2:14.
You get mad at me when I correct you, so I don't do it. Okay.
Habakkuk. Habakkuk. Golly.
This is why you need to go to seminary.
Who even did Habakkuk? I am in it. It doesn't matter.
you're not in seminary.
I am. Thank you. I start my first master's class today.
Have you had your class, though?
Yes.
What was it about?
I have read it. Look, I am 5 classes in, thank you, because my classes transfer.
He hasn't started.
I have. Don't listen to him.
Habakkuk 2:14.
Yes.
For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord's glory as the water covers the sea.
Yeah. So pray God's glory across the earth. Do you think it's out of context a little bit?
I'm not going to comment.
Most
on that.
Definitely it is. I will comment on that. I don't know why we do this. I don't know why Christian organizations just take verses.
Because it's easy to do.
Especially in the Old Testament. We just like. Well, there was a verse. What was that holiday we were celebrating? Never mind. I'm not even going to say it. But. I don't know why we sort of a little bit of pet peeve. I was looking at it this morning and I was like, I don't even know that this passage is really meaning this.
What was that?
I don't
do you mean? It was See You at the Pole. That's what it was.
It was See You at the Pole.
Another prayer day.
And it was, it's that main passage that everyone uses.
It was bad.
Well, it was just the...
it was awful.
Oh, what is that passage called? It's in First Chronicles or something like that.
Oh, if my people who are called by my name, blah, blah, blah.
And
yeah,
it's just man, if you're not careful, you will pull that thing. I mean, you will just... Second Chronicles 7:14. You will just rip it right out of context. And I don't know why we just randomly choose verses. Like, you know what?
It's because it's easy to do.
Prayer day. Maybe so. But anyways, the podcast is not about ripping things out of context.
No, it is not. It is actually letting them marinate in the context.
Yeah, but I don't know that because I didn't go to seminary, so, you know.
Hmm?
What?
Excuse me?
What over there? What?
What did you just say?
Okay, so Eric, you did happen to preach on prayer.
I did.
I got a lot of good comments about it, so.
Yeah.
Somebody came in this morning and commented you on it, so.
Really? Who?
Said you did a good job.
Ooh.
Nobody. Not gonna mention their name of the podcast. Gotta get permission before you just randomly say names.
That's not true.
So
I mean, not criticizing them,
right?
Never. So, okay,
but yes, they did. Good comment. So tell us a little bit about your sermon. Walk us through that.
Okay, so basically, and I want y'all's comments on these because I think it's important because my wife told me that I talk too much on this podcast. So I'm gonna let y'all talk about some of these things.
At least she listens.
Exactly. I don't know if she listens to all of it, but. She's like, I can hear this at home, and just turns it off, I'm sure.
Don Shula passed away, by the way.
Really?
He did.
Man.
Passed away this morning.
Who is that?
How am I even going to do this now? I'm so devastated.
Crazy.
Okay.
Who is that?
Do you know who that is, or are you just being sarcastic?
No, he's an NFL quarterback.
Okay, yeah. Well, he was the winningest NFL coach, I think,
he was a coach, too.
Yeah.
Was he a quarterback?
Never heard of him.
It's okay.
Anyways, go ahead.
Okay, so... Before I really dove into my points on Sunday, I really talked about how there's a couple of problems that we have in our prayer life. And I get all of this type of, I hate to call it filler, but supplementary commentary on this subject from this guy named Paul Miller, who wrote a book called A Praying Life. And if you haven't read it, it's a really good book. It's not only would I recommend it as a good book, I read it along with my Bible study that I do every day. And so I got through it. I got through it at a fairly slower pace than usual, but it's a really good book on prayer. And so I couldn't talk about everything he talks about in the book, so I kind of just picked out three things that kind of went together. And one of the problems he says that we have in prayer is that we're too grown up in our prayers. You know, we like to use the Lord's Prayer or another prayer of Jesus's or, you know, some of these songs that happen in the New Testament, these hymns that you can find, and we like to use those as our prayer structure. And that's not bad. You know, I'm not saying not to do that. But I'm saying I think the majority of our prayers shouldn't be that way. And I just think that our prayers are too grown up. What do y'all think about that?
That they're too... too grown up.
Yeah, like they're too sophisticated.
I would agree.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like especially like in a... I don't know if this is exactly what you mean, but I feel like some people focus so much on trying to make it sound really eloquent.
Okay, yeah.
I know you were saying it more of like basing it off of other things in the Bible, but whenever you say it that way, it was making me think of any time, you know, like we're in church and you hear somebody pray, they have to try to use the biggest words possible.
Sure.
Which always kind of bothers me. I'm just like, you don't have to, just because you're in front of a room full of adults doesn't mean you have to.
Yeah.
Use all these fancy words and pray for 10 minutes.
Yeah, there's not a minute requirement you've got to get here. Yeah.
Okay, so can I ask a question?
Sure.
Two questions.
Sure.
So are you at all saying it's bad to pray scripture?
No.
No.
Okay, I said that earlier.
Oh, did you? Okay, good. Yeah. Glad just to make sure.
I clarified. Right. I said it's okay to do that, but I don't know that should be how we pray most of the time.
Okay. And does it bother anybody else if somebody prays daddy? Oh. Does that not like...
I've never heard somebody do
that. It doesn't bother me.
I've heard it a couple times.
It doesn't... It's fine. Like, whatever you want to do. But
it's just sort of weird.
It's just sort of weird.
Yeah, that's kind of
makes
odd.
You feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. Right? You're just like...
Oh. It makes me question whether their dad is of the living or the dead. But that's just fine. Okay. So, but another thing I mean by grown up is, you know, we mature in our Christianity sometimes, and which is good. We should do that. But I feel like a lot of times we use that... Hey, I've been through life, and this is just how I've always prayed, and so I pray like this every day. And it's almost the same prayers every day.
Yeah.
You know? Not saying that that's bad. I think there's some good fruit from repetition in prayer. But at the same time, I don't know that that should be all the majority of our prayer life. Like, you should have things you pray for every day, but that should not be the majority of your prayer life, is all I'm saying. And I think we try to be grown-ups when it comes to praying. Anyway, so the second problem that I saw here was we think more of our own ability than we should. So when we look to pray for something or we have a problem before we even get to the praying for it, we have a problem, we try to fix it ourselves a lot of the time because we have ability. We're talented people. We try to go and do it ourselves. But that's not really how God has instituted it. He wants us to come before him so he can either empower us or do it his own way. So what do you think about that?
I'm confused. Say it again. You're fixing it yourself?
Yeah. So you a problem comes up in your life, and instead of going to God in prayer about it, you just go fix it. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you're not... Okay. I thought you were meaning like you fix it through your prayer or
no,
something.
No.
So you just like put on your...
I didn't have time to address that problem.
Okay. Yeah. I get it now. Yeah, well, I do think it's a... I think that's something people do.
It's easy to do, though, right? I mean, if I can fix it.
Yeah, and you want things to go your way. And I feel like we subconsciously know that, like, you know, if sometimes when we pray to God, he's not always going to give us a yes answer.
Right.
So you're going to try to make it go your way and what way you want it to go, because God may not, his way may not be the same way you want to go.
Sure, yeah. All right, so, and the third problem is that our culture is very cynical. So... like, my prayers make no difference, or God's already planned out the future of the world anyway, so why am I praying for any of this stuff? Or I've prayed for this one thing for 50 years, and nothing's ever come of it, so why am I even doing it? That, to me, is the world's cynicism leaking over into our Christianity. What do you think about that?
Define that when you say cynical.
I defined it in here. Let's see where it is here. Cynicism is an inclination to question whether something is worthwhile.
Yeah, so I think those last two things are probably what happened. I would say probably quite often, probably most of the time.
Yeah.
Especially that last one, somebody who's prayed for something over 50 years and they just can't understand why they feel, and most of the time it's they feel like their prayer hasn't been answered, but it's probably been answered in some other way that they just haven't seen or they can't see or they're looking for the other answer.
Yeah.
So
I would say a lot of that cynicism comes from that.
Yeah.
And then also you have that age old question, well, why am I praying and asking God to do things if he already knows?
If he already knows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I agree.
So those are the three problems I really tried to tackle.
Would you have added any more if you had more time? Is there any other problems that you would have addressed?
Or just the- I really wanted to address how there's a couple things. So the first thing I wanted to address but just didn't have time for was that God isn't our genie in a lamp. Like we can't just call on him and he fixes every single thing the way that we would have him fix it. So God does answer our prayers, like you're kind of saying, but not exactly how we would imagine him answering the prayer or whatever. J.D. Greer said it really well yesterday. He said, you know, sometimes, you know, because God tells us that, why would he hand us snakes? Why would a good father hand us snakes when he would hand us bread, you know? And sometimes we feel like the bread that we want is bread, but it's actually a snake, and God does not give that to you.
Yeah.
And instead gives you something else that you might see as a snake, but it's actually bread. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I've also heard it said that if we knew what God knew, then we would have answered our prayer the same way.
Yeah.
Which is really
the same thing. Yeah, he said a statement like that too.
Yeah.
And so I really wanted to include that because I feel like I don't know if there's not been enough teaching on the subject or what, but I feel like that's how we feel.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the time. Yeah. Is that, well, if I pray to God and because he fixes all of my problems, or it's I pray to God and he loves me, so he's going to do this for me. And that's also a no-no. So
it's a little Jesus in my pocket idea.
Yeah. So those are that was one thing I really wanted to get to.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't. And I always like to reference and explain the praying without ceasing comment that you see over and over.
First Thessalonians 5:17.
It doesn't mean that we should be praying all the time. You know what I mean? Like that I'm having this conversation with you means that I'm sinning because I'm not actively praying at this very moment. Like, that's not what that
24
means.
24 hours a day.
That's not what that means. But I really wish I could have hit on that, too. But I'm a Baptist.
What does it mean?
I'm a Baptist, so I only have.
What does it mean?
It means that there's never a point in your life where prayer does not exist anymore. So when I think about praying without ceasing, I think about you're praying actively, not continually. Like, it's not like I don't do anything in my day. I don't talk to any other person besides God, right? But it's that in all moments of my life, prayer is an active aspect of it.
Could you add or say that, because when we think of prayer, we think of a conversation with God, right? But if you're thinking, could you say that anything else could be prayer? Like, could worship in a way be prayer? If you're praising God, could it in a way? What do you think?
I mean,
who did I hear that from? Maybe it was Dr. Aiken.
I don't know, but I pray when I worship, if that makes sense. I don't know that I ever view my worship as praying.
Okay, so if I pray, so for example, just a popular contemporary song right now is Graves into Gardens, right? Mm-hmm. And let's say the chorus of that song is there's nothing better than you. So if I pray there's nothing better than you, what's the difference between me praying it and then me singing it in that song? Does that make sense?
I mean, I don't know that there's a difference because I feel like you're worshiping God either way. But I just don't view it that way. I don't know that there's a right or wrong answer to what you're saying. But I agree with you. There'll be moments like if we were to sing that song in church, I would probably quit singing for 3 or 4 seconds and pray personally. Like,
sure.
Like, God, you are the most important thing to me, and if you're not, purge me of whatever it is that's doing that to me. But I don't know that that means that we're, I don't know.
Interesting.
I don't know.
Okay. I was just curious.
Yeah. So I kind of walk through these problems one by one. You know, the first point was becoming like a child again type of thing.
Yeah.
you know, because Christ interacts with children a lot. And in Jesus' day, children were not idolized like they are today. Especially in American culture, where we think our children are literally the greatest thing that have ever happened to the world. And they're not, but that's a whole nother sermon. But it's almost as if we feel that way, and then when we read Jesus experiencing children, or talking to children, and the disciples tell the children to go away, we're like horrified by that. We're like, oh, what have you done that to my sweet Johnny? Like, no, that's not what's happening. Actually, they're coming to Jesus, and the disciples are shooing them away like they're animals. Like, they don't want anything to do with them. And it was a really popular concept back in Jesus' day of having children and just giving them away. Like, that's just what they would do. Or they would give them, they would throw them out on the street or whatever. It's just what they do. And so children are everywhere, right? It's not how we view them today.
That is terrible.
We often, exactly. But that's how they viewed them. It was their culture. I'm not saying it was right, but it was just the way that it was. But when Jesus interacts with them, he tells the disciples, like, you guys need to stop. Like, he's getting angry with them. Or the word is indignant. Like, I don't want you to prohibit them from coming to me. And there's this idea that children are selfish, because they are. Like, they are the most selfish human beings in the world. Like, I need this now. And we go, oh, okay. Like, that's literally what we do. We don't go, you're just selfish. Get it together. We don't do that. We look at children and go, okay, I'll do whatever you want to do. And that is the image that Jesus is trying to get us into when we see God. You know, he talks about us not coming to God with it all together, but he calls us as people who are weary, who need rest. Yeah. That's who Jesus is looking for. And like in the book, he describes it as going to God as a wobbly child. You know, when children just then learn to walk, they kind of wobble a little bit. And that's how we should come to God. And so, and then you have Matthew 21, where children come praising Jesus. Like, he's in the temple, and after he's shoot everybody out, which I think is funny, but he shoots out all the robbers, and then the children come in and start praising Jesus, and people are telling them to stop. And Jesus is like, you morons, that is not what I'm asking you to do. And it's a direct reference to Psalm 8:2. And the whole point of that was to say that we need to come to Jesus as our normal self, not as this self that we've promoted ourselves to be. Like, that I have it all together, that I'm this great Christian person. We're to come to God broken and helpless. A great thing he talks about in the book is being artificial in our prayers, or unreal with God in our prayers. Because I don't know, like, I could just imagine having a conversation with Will, just an ordinary conversation, and I'm acting like I'm this Christian who has it all together on my high horse. Like, Will would look at me like I'm an idiot. Because Will's like, I know you. You're the worst. Like, that's literally what he would think. But I have a hard time thinking that when we do that to God, he's not looking at us that way. He's like, this isn't you. Why are you putting off some image to me that you're not, especially in your prayer life? That makes no sense. And then I quote Olaf from Frozen, which is great.
Yeah, great theologian.
The great theologian Olaf, because he sings that song, This Will All Make Sense When I'm Older, in that movie. And it's this premise that just because we're older in age and mature, that we just will figure it all out and be this mature individual. And Olaf literally mocks it in the movie, because that's just not what happens. So that was the main point of that, which led to the next point: learn to be helpless. Talked about Paul and the thorn in the flesh and things like that, and how he asks God to take it away from him. And I think J.D. Greer brought this up this past weekend too, but he says, you know, he asked him three times. And yeah. God was so done with him asking, he literally told him, hey, stop asking for me to take this away from you, because I'm not going to. Like, are we that way in our prayer life?
Wouldn't that be nice, though? Wouldn't it be nice for God to just be like...
I think so, but I also think that we're not that determined in our prayer life. Just to kind of throw some shade on ourselves. I just don't think that we're that determined. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. But, you know, Jesus continually reached out to helpless people. But only when we become helpless do we really understand our need for God. And even in our helplessness, again, it's one of those things we can't forget. I think it's one of those things where this concept, which has been pushed more lately, is always saturating yourself in the gospel. Never forgetting the gospel. Because when we recount the gospel, we realize how helpless we really are. especially in times like right now where we're in the coronavirus and people are dying and we felt like we were secure, but in reality we were not. And it just reminds us of how helpless we are.
Yeah. So do you think, like, I don't know why, but you talk about all this, and the number one word that's come into my brain is just vulnerability. Do you think that's a big part of what our prayer life should consist of? Do you think we should be more vulnerable when praying?
I think so. I think that should be what it is, honestly. Yeah. Because, like, it's easy for me to have a meaningful conversation with my wife about something, but if I'm not vulnerable with her, what am I really doing?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just posturing is all sure. I'm doing, making myself look better.
So can we ask the elephant in the room question? So why would I need to be vulnerable if you already knows? Because there's going to be somebody who has that question.
Why should I be vulnerable with God
if he already knows everything that I'm struggling with and going with, then what's the point?
Because there's a difference between, I think there's several reasons, but one of them is if you can't be real with God, are you going to be real with anybody? If God knows everything that you've done and yet you're still trying to hide it from
yeah.
him, because that's what you're doing. If you're not totally vulnerable with God with your own sin, you're hiding it. That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
So you can't hide behind this facade of a question that says, well, if God already knows, I don't need to tell him about my pornography. Like, yes, you do. You very much do, because you need that solved. You need that fixed. It's not as though you can ignore it and not talk to God about it,
yeah.
and it'll just go away. Like, that's not what's happening.
Do you think it's kind of like you need to admit the problem?
I think that's part of it.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the whole basis of our salvation anyway.
Yeah.
It's our admittance of our failure. Like, we are failures, and we come to God as failures, and he saves us from all of that failure. I do think it's an important question for people to ask. Well, if God already knows, why am I going to him with any of it? Well, number one, he asked you to, so there's that. So it doesn't really matter what I think about it. But two, you have to be real with God with who you are, because if you're not, God just looks at you and he's like, this isn't you. I don't know who this is, but this isn't you. Like, you are this person that you don't admit yourself to be. Which leads into the last point about cynicism and how it's easy for us to be cynical in prayer instead of being helpless. You know, it's almost as if cynicism makes me want to change who I am in order for people to see me a different way. And not only do we do that through other medias and platforms, but we do it through prayer as well. So,
yeah, I agree with you, but I would lean more on the idea of just the admittance of our failure, but also on our need for God, right? We need somebody else to do this for us. So I think you're right, but I would lean on that aspect too, of the side.
Well, yeah, but
I think there's many, many causes.
That's what I'm saying. There's so many different, like, to have any sort of meaningful relationship with anyone, vulnerability has to be one of the number one things you do. Because if you don't, you're not going to have a deep relationship with anybody, especially with a God that knows everything about you. Like, my wife personally knows that I'm a failure. Like, she knows everything about me, and she would be glad to tell you all of my failures, right? Because that's who she is. But even that doesn't come close to what God views me as, right?
Yeah.
Like, God knows I'm helpless and in need of him. And yet, but if I come to him all the time in prayer being like, God, it's just been such a great day, and I don't have any problems and all this stuff. It's like, no, God's
okay.
Like, you have so many problems.
So what you're saying is that we don't have to clean ourselves up and then be like, all right, well, God, here I am.
Yeah, you know? Because the whole point of the life that you live right now, especially in American culture, is to make myself look better than I actually am. That's literally what all that people do. I want to look better than I actually am.
Yeah.
And God is just like, what a waste of time. Like, if you're not real with yourself, how in the world are you going to be real with me? And it's just I've been struggling with that type of idea. I've been really working through these couple of ideas.
Yeah.
Especially when you start getting into the cynicism part, because once you start getting to that, it starts to really reveal some really ugly habits. Because you're like, well, God's not going to do this, so. You know, well, I'm going to pray for this person, but the reality is they're going to die and go to hell anyway, so. Like, that's literally, whether we admit that or not, that's literally what we do.
Sure. All right, so let's wrap this thing up a little bit. So before we move on, unless you have anything else to add there, Eric, are you
done? I mean, I can keep going. It doesn't matter.
I thought that was your last. Was that not your last point?
No, I said it led into it, but we don't have to talk about it anymore. It's fine.
Well, you can talk about it. I thought you were done. So you can say your last
point. I'm as done if you're done. I don't care.
Well, it doesn't.
I talked about this on Sunday. I
thought you were already done. What is your last point, at least? Tell us that.
Well, I did tell you. I said it leads into the cynicism. So cynicism and prayer, which talks about how, long story short, it's easy for us to Monday morning quarterback everything. So on Monday morning, we wake up and everyone's played, and we're like, man, look how terrible that team was. That's easy for us to do, right? But it leads into this thought process of, well, I'm going to see somebody's life and how great it is, and then think about my life, and I'm like, man, my life is so terrible compared to that person's life. And then we either, A, spin into that cynicism and we become super negative, or we try to spin ourselves to look better than we actually are, just like the person that we just looked at.
Yeah.
And we do that with God all the time. But anyway.
So what were your application point?
Okay, so first application point was we have to be our normal selves in prayer. That was my first application point. We have to be broken and helpless. My second application point was our salvation and Christian life are based upon helplessness. So how do I come to a conclusion that I'm helpless? Well, it's rooted in the gospel and what God has done for you. And the last one is don't let cynicism lead you to spend your life to make you look better than you actually are.
Okay. Good job over there. Good sermon. Or at least Paul Miller does a good job.
Yeah, he does a good job. He does a really good job. I only quoted him a few times, but most of these concepts come from him.
So side note, to tie 2 weeks together, you did a topical sermon, mm-hmm. right? So we talked about the three types of preaching last week with Clay. Mm-hmm. This week you did topical, which you rarely do.
Yeah,
right?
Rarely. Yeah.
But that topical was saturated in Scripture.
Yes.
Which in turn almost still makes it expository.
Yeah.
Other than you just didn't walk through one passage.
I'm trying to see how many.
Interesting side note there.
I used 8, 9, 10. I used 10 different scriptures to base all this out of.
Now, when you came to that, were you like, okay, I'm going to talk about prayer and then just go search in the Bible?
No. So, I'll just tell you what happened. So, I got the call on Thursday to come do it.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know on Monday I was going to be doing it. It was Thursday. So I got the call doing it Thursday, which is fine. It's whatever.
Yeah.
And then I sat there. I had two or three ideas that I wanted to do that just immediately, I don't know how it comes to you, but it almost comes to me immediately.
It's the Holy Spirit.
Of two or three things. And usually two of them are what I really want to talk about. And that third one, I really don't. And that's probably the one I need to preach on. But that's how my brain works. And so I'm thinking about all these things. And this was one of them. But when this type of thing happens, I just look at my wife and say, what should I preach on? And she looks at me like, are you involving me in this? I'm like, oh yeah, I'm crashing and burning with you. That's what's happening. And then she said, well, just do prayer. You've been reading this book and it's been really good. And I'm like, that's a good idea. So basically what I did is I took three chapters and I used their chapter headings. Well, and I say use very loosely. I molded those chapter headings into my points. And then the main scriptures he used in those texts, I pulled out. And I didn't use all of them because there were some I pulled out and I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. Or I feel like he's trying to prove his point more than he's exegeting this text type of thing. So I got the majority of my texts from him.
Right.
Yeah.
But you didn't. You didn't rip them out of context. You made sure that they were.
No. Like, I added more to some of them.
Yeah.
Because it just didn't make any sense. And if I didn't add the couple of verses before or the verse after, you would have thought that scripture, if you're just a run-of-the-mill listener, you would have thought he was talking about prayer in whatever I was looking at. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But with the context, he wasn't. It was more about how we posture ourselves towards God in a way. Which can be applied to your prayer life. So,
sure.
So yeah, I had to add. Yep. I had to add quite a few things on the back end, which is fine. Like, because I think he quotes, just example, 2 Corinthians 12 with the thorn in the side, and he starts with the thorn in the side, not how he gets to that point. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I think when you're, and this is off topic, so I won't say much, but when you're writing a book focused mainly towards church leaders, I imagine. I'm sure that there's people who are just laymen who can read it.
Yeah.
Some of those things don't matter as much.
Right.
Because when we read Thorn in the Flesh, we sort of understand and already know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's different than preaching.
Yes.
So, all right, so let's move on and finish here with one final thought, and that's I want to talk about how prayer sort of looks like in our lives. Mm-hmm. But before I say this, I want to make sure that the listeners, those who are listening, know that the things, what we're not saying is that this is how prayer should look like in your life, right? Mm-hmm. Or that it has to look like this way. So if I say, hey, I prayed this, this, and this, that doesn't mean that Joe or whoever's listening should be like, okay, well, I need to change my prayer life like this, this, and this then, okay? Right, would y'all agree?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure that's out there before we... So, Jenna, let's start with you. Just when you're thinking of prayer, how does that look like in your life, just on like a daily basis?
My life?
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest, probably should do it more.
Okay.
I definitely pray every night before I go to bed because I have a devotional I read that's kind of my quiet time.
Yeah.
I guess you could say I always read a devotional, I'll read some verses, and then I'll pray. I do have... Pretty like you said, we all have those same things, and I feel like we pray for every day. You know, family members, friends, people that I know, you know, just need prayer, that have things going on. And I feel like the main thing I've been focusing on lately is just, you know, with being a musician and doing music for a living and trying to do that, just making sure that I know that I'm doing it for the Lord and not taking it a selfish way. And praying that he will, like, you know, I'm trying to work on more music lately, trying to write more. So knowing that, like, you know, he'll speak through me and through the lyrics and the music and touch people's lives.
Yeah.
That's been my main thing lately. So, like I said, I probably should pray more. And if I think of a few things here and there during the day, I'll pray about it. But
sure.
Usually just kind of at nighttime.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You want me to go next?
Sure.
You want to go? So mine... Okay, so time-wise, mine's a lot of car prayers. So anytime, almost anytime I get in my car, I'm doing some sort of praying. And that really the only reason that because I do it, so a main time prayer time for me is in the morning in my car. So when I leave my house, and most of the time that prayer is me looking back at yesterday and thinking, God, I really messed up here. But I was telling somebody this the other day, I try to always start my prayers with, God, I know that you're holy, perfect, and sovereign, and I know that you give forgiveness, grace, and mercy, right? So I'm almost setting up my mind for when I say, hey, I really messed up this. It almost as if I just remind myself of the beginning, right? That's just what I do personally because I'll say it, and then I'll lead down the self-condemnation path of, man, I really suck, and I'm terrible. Mm-hmm. But it's as if my mind helps me reorient back onto what God promises that he gives. So anyways... I do that in the morning. I mean, it really mine are just a lot of car prayers. One thing I'm trying to work on is praying before I'm reading. So I'm walking through First John, and trying to pray before I do that, for the help of the Holy Spirit illumination, things of that nature. And then I do pray before I go to bed. But a lot of times that prayer is very, which not that it's a bad thing at all, but it is a very normally short, and because by that time I'm ready to get in bed and go to sleep. And so I'm like, all right, well, that's probably one of those where I'm just like, all right, well, great day, appreciate it. And then I go to bed. So, but yeah, it's nothing special, I don't think. So
I thought it was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm glad you
approved. I like that. I like the whole reorienting your brain, something like that.
You
that.
Have That's to. Good. You will go to a deep
Well, no, but it
place.
Helps. It doesn't help me, obviously, but it makes sense knowing you that you do that.
It does, doesn't it?
Because you're one of those people that's like...
I will self-condemn
you will fall
myself.
Into the pit.
Yeah, I will.
So it's good for you to reorient your brain to be like, okay, well, that's not what's happening.
Yeah.
Well, me, I've been, so obviously I've been reading this book, so sure. I've been doing a lot of different things lately. I have two or three long-ish prayers per day as far as like a habitual thing.
Yep.
So I do one when I wake up in the morning, and it's usually for my wife so that she'll not feel as crappy being pregnant. I pray for Charlotte that she continues in her development as far as learning how to do things, being less of a burden as far on my wife. That she'll come to know the Lord Jesus, things like that. So that's usually what I do every morning. And they're never the same. I mean, they're all different.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But that's basically the premise of that. And then there's, when I'm walking through Jeremiah right now, and so I do that. So I'm like, hey, God, I'm coming to the text broken and sin. I'm a sinner, so I can't get everything you want me to get out of this text on my own. I need you to not only reveal to me its meaning, but then to root it into my soul so that it will go to my brain and eventually my mouth so that I can share it. So I do that. I do car prayers too a lot. Yeah. But I'm also finding, and this book kind of revealed it to me, you know, have you ever been praying and like something comes to mind and you're like, how rude of that thought to come into my mind. I was praying and you just messed up the conveyor belt. And he makes a good point. He goes, how do you know that that's not God bringing that into your life? Because it's a sin that you're dealing with that you don't realize and you need to deal with it. Or it's someone that needs prayer, you know. So I'm like, oh, that's a good point. And that's this whole book, though. It's like, oh, that's a good point. And then I have a prayer for basically the church in the middle of the day, and then I have a fairly selfish prayer right before I go to bed. So it's everything that I'm dealing with personally. Because if I don't do it that way, I'll do all of it in one prayer, and then I won't pray for the rest of the day. So I try to separate it.
Yeah, that's how I tend to be. I need to learn how to...
But recently, the one habit I've picked up is having really short, concise, vulnerable prayers that are almost like confessions. Does that make sense?
Sure.
I'm not asking for God for anything in these prayers. I'm just admitting to Him my failure all the time. So, like last night, perfect example. Charlotte would not go to bed last night. I was watching Last Dance. I was really mad. I was like, this is one thing. You know, this one thing I wanted to do all day, and you're ruining it. And she's like, you know,
I don't care.
And so as she's doing that, instead of like either yelling or getting angry in frustration, I literally to myself was like, God, I don't have patience. That's it. That's it. And I've been doing, there's like 100 of those that happen every day. Or I'll be reading, and I'm like, God, I'm so tired of reading. And that's it. And I find that God, there's something to the confession of what I'm going through. I feel very Catholic when I say that. But but it's not to a priest, though, right? It's
like sure.
Some dude. It's to God through the mediation with Christ. So, and that's the number one thing I picked up out of that book, is he just says, why do our prayers have to be a time limit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good point. I don't know, because I think a lot of us would just, well, I have to pray for a good 5-10 minutes, and then and then it works, you know, or it. That's
yeah. Right, exactly.
You have to meet the time requirement to make it work.
It's as if Jesus teaches the opposite, right? In Matthew 6, I mean, he tells you not to babble on like the Gentiles do, right?
Right. And I think long prayers are good. I think we would all.
I think
admit
they have
that
their pay.
They have their place, but if that's all you're doing,
right?
That is not what you should.
I find the car prayers for me. So, and just to be completely honest and transparent, it's because it is the most. There's nothing else going on that I can possibly do.
You're very alone
from here to my house, right? So it's just like, to me, that's the most natural. Mm-hmm. Especially, and honestly, if I'm like at a podcast to listen to, that's when I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm gonna pray now, you know. But anyway,
yeah.
So hopefully through hearing this, maybe people have picked up. One thing comes to mind, and if you have anything you can add, the first thing that comes to mind is there's no perfect way to do this, right? We all three gave completely different ways that our prayer looks in our life. And I don't know that any of us was wrong in any way, right? So it's going to look different to each person. So I don't know that there's any perfect way for prayer. Do you have anything else to add there?
Well, the only thing I would add is that, and I know we mentioned J.D. Greer, like, we know him personally, but he had a really good point when he's like, do you know what number one way to get better at prayer is praying?
Yeah, just doing it.
Like,
yeah.
God cares more about your innocent, broken prayers than someone who's praying for 10 minutes straight that has it all together.
Yeah.
Like, he really wants that. And I think that's my main encouragement to people. I got a really nice email yesterday from a lady that
did you
listen to the sermon, and she's an older lady. I mean, she's probably in her 60s, and she said, I've been struggling with prayer my whole life. She goes, I've always felt like I've been doing it wrong. She goes, and you've brought to light that it doesn't matter how good or how quality my prayers are.
Yeah.
Because God knows what I need. The Holy Spirit communicates my needs when I can't even communicate them. So why am I so worried?
I've always heard to pray what you have.
Yes.
Right. Pray what you have.
Yeah.
And that doesn't have to be anything special. So And we could have, I mean, you could, I mean, we could have talked about, like, people use the Psalms, and they pray the Psalms, and things of that nature. So we could have went through different things. But
yeah, and I've just, I guess, one other quick thing. I feel like, you know, so many people, at least me personally, I know so many people that are so, like, uncomfortable praying in front of anybody.
Yeah.
And I guess just because I've been kind of forced to do it with praise band here at church and with different things, I kind of got used to it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that I just, like, want to jump up in front of a room full of people and start praying, but, like, if somebody asks me to do it, like, I'll do it. I don't mind it. And I feel like so many people, like, freak out over that and get so nervous about it. But it's like, I mean, like we've said, you know, you need to think about the fact that you don't have to sound so eloquent about everything. You know, your prayers are just as effective if you sound like a five-year-old praying.
Yeah, right. It does make me jealous, however, when someone gets up to pray and they're really good at it. And I'm like, man.
Must be nice.
Like, how does it feel to have an open channel with Jesus Christ? Like, what is happening right now? Because I said that in my sermon. I said there used to be a guy at my home, at the church I grew up in, who would get up to pray, and you were like, this guy's about to pray for 5 minutes, and God is hearing every word that this guy says. And he's like, write it down.
Tell.
He's like, okay, what else do you need? Okay. All right, it's done. Yeah. Basically already done.
Got it. Already did it.
And I'm like, man, what the heck? And then the next week, like, some random guy would get up there and pray, and I'm like, boo. Where's
bring
the back other guy?
Bring the other guy back.
And I'm sure that guy's passed on, but good, good dude.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, now he's talking to God with that voice right now. God's like, really? Yeah? Do you need anything? Like, literally, that's how it works in my brain.
Can you add an addition?
exactly.
I really like a pool.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, so, Jesus, I like the house that I got.
Maybe we should do an episode on heaven. That's what we should do.
In the podcast.
On what? So you can check us out on Facebook at the Pastor and Intern Podcast. We do post these podcasts, I guess video cast or whatever you call them, on Facebook. One this week will be posted on Thursday because Thursday is the National Day of Prayer. But they are on Facebook. They're on our Facebook page. They're also on the First Baptist Church of Blackshear's Facebook page.
Yeah. A lot of places.
You can find them there. I don't have anything else to add.
You're not going
to
talk about any of the stuff.
Wrap it. Nope.
Nope. I'm not. None of that stuff.
Exciting things coming.
Okay.
We'll say that.
Okay. Yes.
We'll say that.
I was hoping you would say at least that.
No, I'm not saying anything other than that yet. But yes, exciting things coming for the podcast.
Great.
So we are for the word, for the truth, and for the church. Thanks again for listening to the Pastor and Intern Podcast.